Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thanks very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. My pleasure to continue to be with you. You're going to be glad you're hanging out with me because I got Joan Pride here with us. Joan is a longtime member of our Brain Trust. Couldn't do without her. She's been with us now for a long time. In fact, I guess coming up next month. Joan, welcome back, by the way.
Thank you.
I think next month is your 11th anniversary.
Wow.
Could that be right?
I'm shocked.
Well, you joined us on January 1st, 1999.
Huh? Gee.
So, wouldn't this be the 11th anniversary?
I guess it would.
How about that?
I cannot believe it.
How long have you been married?
15 years.
So almost as long as you've been married, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how about that? So anyway, it was good to have you back, Joan.
Thank you.
Some interesting stuff happening in your city right now. You're there in Washington, D.C.
That's right.
You're not far from the White House.
Just a couple blocks.
So what's happening? And I think it's happening at the White House. There's a job summit going on today.
I believe so.
At the White House. Mm-hmm. And so I'm anxious to see what happens there. And one of the things that I hope happens, Joan. In the previous hour, I've already gone off on my rant about what I think they should do and some of my comments about some of the deficiencies I think that will happen today at the event, which I won't bore you with right now.
Oh, thank you.
I thought you'd like that. But I do think something that I think will interest you is I hope that there's some discussion about some tax issues to help promote jobs. Right?
I would think so.
Like
sure.
A tax credit? Shouldn't that be part of the... Wouldn't you think that'd be part of the discussion? I mean...
Well, we've written... The tax letter's written about that. There already has been a lot of discussion about some kind of a tax credit, but there's concern that it wouldn't work the way it was intended to.
Tell us about that.
Well, for example, this tax credit that was envisioned, I guess, over the... You know, it's come up before, but when it was envisioned over the last few months, the idea was that it would... encourage companies to hire workers.
Right.
But I guess the concern is that you could have a lot of, we would say, hanky-panky.
Well, gaming the system, I think, is the term that I heard somebody use this week, that they're trying to figure out how to make it where you couldn't game the system.
Yeah, and there's also some thought that is a tax credit really going to make a company hire a worker? Wouldn't they be hiring this worker anyway, really?
Well, but it might put them to work a little earlier. And see, here's the thing. I don't think big businesses need tax credits to hire workers. Because you know why? They got cash coming out of their ears.
And I think the credit that was being talked about earlier this year would only have been for small business.
It should only be for small business because we're the ones who are undercapitalized.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, Joan, in my small business, a tax credit would make me more favorable to hire employees,
right.
Hire another employee.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because see, the thing is, Joan, what's happened is and this is a self-fulfilling, kind of can become a self-fulfilling prophecy, we need more people with jobs so they can buy for their families, they can consume and get this economy going a little bit, right? That's
yeah.
One of the problems we got. Our consumer, as you and I've been whom you and I have been praising for a decade, they've fallen off the wagon here.
Yeah.
And so what would happen is if we gave somebody a job, they'd have money to spend. And the thing is, for a small business, we probably would go for. I'll give you an example. Maybe I would hire an employee in 2010 with a tax credit, when I wouldn't hire that same employee without a tax credit maybe till a year from now.
Yeah.
I would tough it out for a few extra quarters.
Right.
You're exactly right. A tax credit isn't going to cause somebody to hire somebody they would never have hired, but I do think it would cause them to hire someone who at least maybe a year early.
Okay.
And so that could, and you know, if that could become millions of jobs, that would be millions of consumers, and that would get the economy going quicker.
That's true.
So it becomes kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
So I think that, I hope that that comes up today. But what I'm worried about, Joan, is that small businesses are not well represented at the event today.
Ah.
See, that's the concern that I have.
Okay.
I have a partial list of who's going to be there. I don't have the full list, but the partial list does not includes three small business owners. And no small business organizations.
Yeah.
And I wasn't invited either, Joan.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised by that.
Aren't you? Well, I think it's because I don't think they want my lip there. I don't think they want my attitude there, Joan, because I might have a little bit of an attitude if I showed up. But anyway, I knew you'd have a report for us on the tax issue. Was it? Do you know about the amount of tax credit that they were thinking about? Do you have any? You remember anything?
I mean, it would have been several thousand dollars, I think.
And it would have been a true credit, right?
Oh, yeah, credit. So come right off your tax.
So let's say that it was a 5,000. If you hired an employee, you got a $5,000 tax credit.
Right, something like that, yeah.
Whenever you filed your taxes, you could take $5,000 of the taxes away.
Yeah.
Like the old investment tax credit.
Right.
Which worked beautifully for a long time,
by the way.
Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I hope that's what comes out of this, and it'll be interesting. Joan, one of the things that is happening that's pretty exciting for a lot of folks is the stock market's up.
That's right.
And you guys say it's not done yet.
We say it's up 60% since March.
Yeah.
And we do warn about volatility, but we think that by the end of 2010, we see an 8% rise from, I guess, where we are now is what
mm-hmm.
we're saying.
Mm-hmm. And the reason, Joan, give us the reason.
Profits. Yeah.
And
average operating profits for S&P 500 companies are going up this quarter, and we think will keep going up into next year.
I think, though, Joan, it has to be said that these profits are on the backs of the unemployed.
Well, yeah.
Because
we do say that labor costs have been cut to the bone.
That's it. And see, these companies have found a way to be profitable in the light of not very much business growth.
Yeah.
And the only way they can do that is by cutting expenses, the large component of which, especially for a big company, because they got all the benefits that they pay, is the payroll issue.
Yeah.
And so these profits, the stock market is going up, folks, as the unemployment rises, so are corporate profits, and so are corporate stock prices. And it's the three are closely, completely connected and joined at the hip. 20 after the hour, right back with Joan Pride. She's with the Kiplinger editors. Right after these messages, I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with me. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame. Thanks very much for staying with me. Thanks for hanging out with me. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you for going there and using it to your advantage. We built it just for you. You got 5 seconds or 15 minutes or anywhere in between on any topic under the small business sun. We've got something there for you. You can read, you can listen to, you can ask a question, get answers, check out my newsletter and subscribe to that while you're there. I hope you'll do that. My blog is there. Lots and lots of stuff there. We got a one-minute thing you can read, a one-minute thing you can listen to, a five-second thing you can read. I mean, it's lots of stuff. So I hope you check it out, smallbusinessadvocate.com. And if you're on Twitter and you want to follow me there, we post every day on Twitter. My location at Twitter is at Jim Blasingame. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about investing a little bit, about what the stock market's doing. Joan, the stock market seems to be weathering a lot of storms. I mean, we've had bad news from different things. We've had the dollar is weakening. That could actually be helping the stock market a little bit, especially the U.S. stock market.
True.
We had the Dubai issue, the Dubai meltdown, credit default.
Yep.
By the way, I've been to Dubai. I've been to Abu Dhabi and Dubai and Sharjah.
You've been to Dubai?
I've been to all the United Arab Emirates. I sure have. You fly into Abu Dhabi, and you drive to Dubai. It's about 90 kilometers south of Dubai, and uh-huh. I mean of Abu Dhabi, and then Sharjah is just below that. So it's an interesting place over there.
Wow!
But the stock market seems to be weathering those issues. So that's kind of a sign of strength.
Yeah.
But this one of the concerns that people have with the stock market levels that we have right now mm-hmm. is that it's based on primarily on expense cutting.
True.
And not on business growth, not on growth of sales.
Right.
And so how are these companies? I mean, they can't cut anymore. I can assure you they can't cut anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There was overreaction a year ago right now, Joan. Major corporations overreacted in their cutting. Because and a lot of people did. Some small businesses did too.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know where things were going.
True.
It was an understandable thing for people to do, but they did nevertheless overreact and overcut.
Yeah.
So they've already gone as far as they can go. So what happens next year if the economy doesn't come back, Joan? And I'm not an investment expert here, but if the economy doesn't come back, how do they duplicate those earnings without growth and not being able to cut anymore?
Right.
So that's what I would be concerned about.
Yeah.
In terms of, that's the reason why you're saying that if the stock market goes up next year, it's only going to be a single digit number, right?
We're saying another 8%, which would be pretty good, I think.
See, it'd be pretty good, but it wouldn't come close to what's happened.
Yes.
What's just happened, and unfortunately, the average investor, I think, Joan, has not been as much a part of this, has not been able to take advantage as much of this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they were probably afraid to put the money, if they had any money.
Right.
If they had any money to put in, they were afraid to. They didn't know what was going on. And I understand, did you hear that, you've heard about the top three banks in New York and Wall Street that are going to pay $30 billion in bonuses this year?
Yeah,
you know about
I did.
That, right? Well, I did a little research on that, and I found that those bonuses are being paid on the performance of their employees this year, largely in things like the stock market.
Oh.
So those are the people that benefited more from this. I think the institutions have wound up benefiting more from the rise in the stock market than they have the individuals, it seems to me. And
yeah.
So that's unfortunate, because that's not good for a lot of 401ks,
right?
That aren't being funded right now. Yes, another thing is, you know, Joan, a lot of 401ks have been suspended from the standpoint of contribution, haven't they?
Yes, a lot have. Some are reversing that, but we think it's going to take a while before most employers reverse that suspension.
Yeah, I've heard that as of the first of the year, there are some of the major corporations that did suspend that are going to kick that back in. Maybe not to the level it had been, but they're going to start that back up a little bit.
Yeah, and that's another thing, that when they do start it back, there's probably going to be a different way of doing it, that it may not be a straight match, but it might be something that's tied to profits.
Right.
Just to kind of protect the company and insulate it next time so that they're not locked into something like that.
Right. Now, I mentioned the dollar earlier, Joan, and one of the things that's happening, you know, the dollar being weak right now, and it's some people consider it to be dangerously weak right now, and the dollar's a little bit under assault. Its image has been tarnished somewhat.
Right.
But as long as the dollar is low, the ability for the U.S. to export goods is good, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Because of the exchange rate, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're our currency expert. Tell us about that.
Well, all I can tell you is that with the dollar weak, that makes foreign sales very strong. So any company that's involved in that is going to do well.
Well, and more, that's what we're doing. And it rolls all the way down to small businesses who support companies who are doing a lot of exporting as their vendor. And, of course, more and more small business owners are getting involved in exporting as well. We'll take a quick break. Right back. We got more to come with Joan Pride after these messages. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with me.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 After. Thanks very much for joining me. Thanks for staying with me. My pleasure to continue to be with you, as always. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And one piece of good news, Joan, that you bring us today is that Kiplinger thinks that the GDP for 2010 will be around 3%. How about that?
We say moderate gains late this year and then through next year.
3% GDP. You know, that. Yeah. And the thing is, Joan, you know, if we could string that together for a few years, that wouldn't be too bad. Unfortunately, we've gone so deep, we've had so much damage in the last year, we kind of need 1 year in there to be a little hotter than that, don't we?
I guess so. You're kind of greedy.
Well, I'm just trying to get this economy kicked off a little bit. But I pray that you're correct on that 3% thing.
Yeah.
I hope you're right about that. Joan, over on the we're talking about the some of the financial services stuff that's going on. The TARP, the Troubled Asset Recovery Program. Aren't you impressed that I know
that's
what that
is? That's a mouthful.
The TARP program that the government passed is kind of controversial.
Yeah.
But tell us where we stand on that program.
Well, the program is going to be extended through October of next year. And, I mean, that's I guess the Obama administration can do that unilaterally.
Right. Isn't it just a pot of money that was committed that they and they I didn't realize there was actually a time frame of when it had to be I didn't realize there was a sunset on that.
Yeah. Apparently, yeah.
So it's going to be through October of next year.
Yeah. I'm not surprised there is a sunset, though, because you can imagine Congress wouldn't want a program like that going on forever.
Well, no, but I mean, once they run out of money, it has to stop because they've only allocated so much money. I guess I thought the money was the sunset, not a date.
Oh, I see.
But aren't there some people who've said, you know, hey, you've gone this long, you haven't spent all the money. By the time you spend it, it's not going to help, and we're just borrowing this money. So why don't we just not do it? There are people who said that, haven't they?
Well, and I think that's why you've got a sunset date.
Yeah, yeah. So what? There's a compromise. You talk about a compromise that they're proposing.
Right. Well, first just to set the stage that there's $140 billion in uncommitted funds. So the compromise would be Treasury would promise no new bailouts without some kind of real emergency.
Yeah.
So
like a
that,
national security
that would
kind
keep,
of thing.
So that they sort of have this in their back pocket if they needed it, in other
right,
words.
Right, right. Well, because, and some people really are concerned that we've gone so far with the government intervention, we've printed so much money, that if we actually did have some kind of a major problem, you know, at some point in time, you can't keep going back to the bank.
Yeah.
And so what you're saying is they consider that $140 billion to be kind of a little bit of a cushion.
Yeah.
So I guess that kind of makes sense.
Are you okay with that then?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not okay with some of the other stuff that's going on. But I guess at this point, you know, what are you going to do? But you're saying that you guys report that the TARP is going to wind up costing us $700 billion. But
no,
is it that?
No, that's not what we say.
Okay. Oh, less than.
Less than.
Okay, less. But isn't that kind of what we thought all along? I mean, that's not really news, is it?
Well, I think a lot of the concern was that it was going to be just the beginning, and and more money was going to be needed.
I got you. So the good news that you're reporting basically this week is that it's not going to get out of hand, which
it's under control.
Which kind of, I mean, that is kind of news. I mean, that's kind of news when it comes to the government. They don't usually do that, do they?
Yeah, no, right. Exactly.
You know, exactly.
And I think the big surprise in all of this was the way banks are repaying this money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, why don't you? They don't like the government.
They want to get away. Yeah.
They don't like the government run their business.
Right, exactly.
I mean, basically, the government just got Ken Lewis fired at Bank of America.
Right.
The government put Fritz, what's-his-name, with General Motors, pitted him between the government and his own board, got him fired.
Right.
The second CEO of GM in less than a year.
Right.
I mean, who wants that? I wouldn't want the government that much involved. I mean, folks, if you want more government involved in your business, if you want more government involvement in the marketplace, go talk to some of these CEOs and some of these banks, and they'll tell you that, government support, government help comes with a steep price tag, doesn't it, Joan?
Yeah.
And not just the payback, but the strings that are attached to it. And so we come back, folks. You've heard of tech transfer, where the government wants to shorten up that process. And we're going to talk about that right after these messages, a little bit of retail news as well. And who's in charge of who's in charge of the census? That's what I'm trying to say this year. Who's going to be in charge of that, the White House or the Commerce Department? 20 Tales. Stay with us. I'll be right back. Welcome back. That's rock and roll right there. That's who is that? Foreigner. That's Foreigner. Exactly. 17 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'm spinning a few platters for you here and blending in a little small business with it. A little bit of Kiplinger as well. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I encourage you to check out their website, kiplinger.com. And you'll find out more about them there. You can find out about their publications, the Kiplinger Letter, which is 86 years old. They're still right cranking that out every week. And Kiplinger's, that's weekly. And then, of course, the biweekly letters, the tax letter, the biofuels letter, and the agriculture letter. Joan, I'm having trouble with my words today
for some reason.
And also, they got that magazine thing.
They sure do. Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And you can find that in newsstands as well. But what's the website is where they can subscribe, right, Joan?
That's right. It's www.kiplinger.com.
And also the phone number.
Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
So check that out, folks. And don't forget to ask them for that 30-day free trial. Joan, here's an interesting thing. I found this very interesting. Over the years, governments have provided grants to academic researchers to produce all kinds of things. And, or, you know, could have come through NASA, or could have come through the universities, so much research is done in academia where are some associated with the government somehow. And then they create this breakthrough, this innovation, and then they do something called technology transfer, which transfers it from academia to the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Gatorade would be a good example of that. I think that was developed in the University of Florida, I think, as I remember.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I never knew that until recently, that that's why it's called Gatorade, because the Florida teams are called in Florida.
Exactly.
Gators.
And so it was developed there, and then it wound up being transferred to the marketplace. But now you guys are reporting that the government is thinking about short-circuiting that whole process, aren't they?
Allowing capital to be raised?
Yeah, but you're talking about you're saying the shift is from federal focus from funding academic research to giving a bigger boost to the early stage firm. In other words, instead of promoting giving grants to academia, going right to the firm that ultimately would have promoted it and let them develop it. Isn't that what you guys are saying right here?
That's what it looks like.
Yeah. So that's an interesting spin on technology transfer. And I'm not sure I understand the politics of this, because there's got to be something here if the government's involved to be sort of bypassing the academic research thing.
That I don't know.
Focusing from academic research to giving a bigger boost to tech firms.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the academics are opposed to this. But anyway, that's an interesting thing. And the reason I wanted to cover that, Joan, is there are a lot of small business owners out there, a lot of small businesses that are looking for the next innovation, the next killer app.
Right.
And one of the things that they do is they hang out around colleges, around universities.
Oh, yeah.
And they see what these guys are up to. They get to know these researchers.
Right.
And they see what they're working on and find out about them. And then they wind up forming partnerships, and then whenever the thing comes to fruition, the business gets the commercial advantage.
Yeah.
So anyway, this could shift that relationship, that dynamic a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. Joan, talk to us about retail. What's happening with retail?
Well, in retail, we're saying brisk sales for electronics. As sure you're not surprised by that,
right?
And you can get a flatter and cheaper flat panel TV this season.
Flat panels are coming down, and you know what else?
It's just flatter. I don't know how it can be any flatter than they are now.
Thinner.
It's pretty flat, and they're pretty thin.
Yeah. I think the thinner is the deal. But here's the other thing. You know, plasma screens were the first ones. And I own a couple of those.
Yeah.
But LCD has really come on strong. And I own one or two of those, too, Joan, in my business. But plasma seems to really have come down a lot. Because I think plasma, I just have an instinct that plasma is not going to make it to the long term. I think LCD will wind up being the long term use of our technology for screens.
I'll take your word for that.
So anyway, look for plasma, folks, and plasma's great. They work fine. They're just heavier, but they're beautiful. But look for those prices to come down. Also, Joan, talk to us about the walk-in clinics. I think this is exciting.
Well, we say they're poised for a resurgence, and because there's going to be a lot more of them. And they're actually counting on healthcare reform to bring in new customers because you'll have more people with insurance that previously were uninsured.
One of my healthcare experts, Grace Marie Turner, has been telling us about this for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And her point is one of the alternatives to government-run healthcare, where people can walk into these clinics and become more healthcare consumers instead of being patients.
Right.
I like that idea. I think these walk-in clinics are great ideas. And also, you point out that a lot of the employers are recommending them, are encouraging.
They're going to encourage the use of clinics. And if you're a really, really big company, you might get develop your own.
And exactly. And it could contribute to self-insurance.
Right.
Going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, I'm going to ask that question again: who's going to be in charge of the census this year? Is it going to be the administration, or is it going to be the organization that's always been in charge of it, the Department of Commerce, which would be my vote? Tintail, stay with us.
Doesn't mean that much to me. Take a chance on the edge of life. Just like all the
are you reeling in the east? Stowing away the time.
A little bit of Steely Dan bringing us back. 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you check it out when you get a chance. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter if you're there. I'm at Jim Blassingame. Joan Pride is our guest. She's with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, the census is going to be taken in 2010.
You bet.
And there was some controversy earlier in the year about who was going to be in charge.
Right, because the White House wanted, I think normally the Commerce Department handles this, but the White House really wanted to keep control over how the census was run.
Yep.
And that kind of created a bit of a scuffle in Congress.
Right. So what's the story? Who's in charge?
Well,
do we know?
I don't see anything here, so
I'm not sure we know yet. I mean, somebody knows, I guess, but my vote is that the Commerce Department remain in charge, because I don't trust the administration. Because it would increase the politicization of the census, and it's already
Congress holds the purse strings, so I think they're going to be able to control this, so that I think it would stay at Commerce.
Well, and see, it would behoove both parties to keep it in Commerce, because even though the Democrats might like for Obama to have it, if a Republican gets in next time and that administration has it, you know, the Democrats wouldn't like that. So I think they need to keep it inside the Commerce Department. But it's very interesting, Joan, how the Commerce Department, how the census affects a lot of things. A lot of people don't realize how it affects it. And you guys report that this year there's only 10 questions.
Well, that's the short form, yes.
Yeah, in the short form. I mean, it's kind of new. It's going to be short. I mean, I think in the past they've had a bunch of questions, a lengthy questionnaire.
Well, yeah, and that surprises me because normally most people get the short form, and then there's a smaller group that gets a longer form.
Ah.
So I don't understand how you could not have a long form at all, unless they're finding other ways to collect that information.
Maybe they're just dealing with the short attention span of most Americans these days. Hey, Joe, talk to us about a COBRA. That's new.
Well, you know, there's this thing called the COBRA subsidy that's been going on most of the year. The employers have to, well, if an ex-employee qualifies, then the employer gives the 65% subsidy, and then they get reimbursed by the government on their payroll tax return.
Right, but it's a form of maintaining your. It's a way. If you get laid off, it's a way to maintain your health insurance.
Well, it's a way to do it without having to pay the full freight.
Right.
As the ex-worker.
Yeah.
Now that only covers workers who were laid off between I think it's August of 2008 and December 31st of this year. So they want to extend it. They're talking about extending it to people who are laid off, you know, into next year.
Right. So this is all part of the additional unemployment benefits debate that's going on right now, right?
Right, exactly. And there's talk about raising that 65 to 75, but we don't think that that's going to happen.
Right. So if you get laid off, and especially if you've got illnesses that are already, you know, already being, you've already got, and, I mean, it's COBRA is a way of sort of evening that out, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it lets you keep your employer health insurance.
Right.
You know, whatever your plan was, you get to keep it for up to 18 months. Now, you only get the subsidy for up to 9 months.
But it's expensive. COBRA is expensive.
Right, but that's why the subsidy is so helpful.
Right, exactly.
If the government's paying 65%, that's pretty good.
And it didn't used to do that, did it? I think in the early days, I don't think it did the 65%.
Well, the subsidy only went into effect, that's what I'm saying, this year.
Oh, I got you. Okay, all right, I see. Yeah, I thought that was pretty new.
The subsidy went into effect in March.
That's what may be going away, you think? Are they
right? I mean, at this point, it's scheduled to anyone laid off after December 31st isn't going to get it under current law.
Right.
But we think Congress is going to extend that to people who are laid off for maybe the next year or so.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling this is going to keep. This is one of those extenders, you know, these perennial extenders that they keep extending and extending, because COBRA is a wonderful thing to have, but when you're laid off, that's the one time you really can't afford to pay for health insurance.
That's what's always kind of rough about COBRA, is it was a great thing that you could actually keep your insurance, but if you're laid off, you obviously don't have as much money, and now you've got this $300,
$400
a month.
It's when you don't have the money, because if you're hired somewhere else and get health care, then you don't need COBRA anymore.
But it's the reason why most people don't buy COBRA.
Right.
When they didn't buy COBRA in the past, they didn't pay for it, if they didn't have a pre-existing condition or some kind of illness that they were worried about.
Exactly.
Because it was just too expensive. It was almost prohibitively expensive.
Oh,
So that's the reason this subsidy is a good thing. And I think that's good for folks. That's a good use of my money. I don't mind my tax dollars going
towards something
like that.
Yeah, I mean, and it's more of a paperwork hassle for the employer, but they don't, I mean, and they have to shell out the money, but they get the money back.
Right, exactly. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today,
as always.
Thank you,
Jim.
We'll see you next time.
Okay.
Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, ladies and gentlemen. Check that out. Check them out at kiplinger.com. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you that to remember that when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.